Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. The pandemic has given tech consumers a crash course on making do, either go without or find a way to repair what's on hand. When so many are working from home, a glitchy phone or laptop can bring an otherwise productive day to a halt. The internet is one source of help in such times of need. iFixit.com is a website that offers thousands of how-to guides to repair everything from phones to PCs to cars and cameras, at least in most cases. Advocates of the right to repair movement still are fighting tech companies that discourage do-it-yourself fixers. That issue just spilled over into the medical equipment field. Founder and CEO of iFixit.com, Kyle Weins, joins us. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
So your website, iFixit.com, it has 63,000 repair guides and step-by-step instructions. How was it devised?
We started out because I was having trouble fixing my computer and I couldn't find a manual. And so out of a peak of frustration, the first time you take something apart, it's hard. The second time you do it, it's easy. And so I figured I would write the instructions once I'd figured out the frustrating process of fixing my laptop. And then I posted the instructions online. They got really popular. And so I figured, well, I'll just keep doing it.
Yeah. So what have you learned over time about how people learn in that way?
Well, the number one thing is that you're capable of more than you think that you are. We have so many people that have, say, fixed an iPhone by putting a new battery in, and before they had never opened electronics before, and they'd say, this is not something that I could do. We say, well, just follow the instructions carefully. And just like cooking, you start out as a novice and you work your way through, and before you know it, you've done something you would have never believed you could.
There are degrees of difficulty on the website, right? So you know what you're getting into?
Right. We rate every procedure from easy to hard. And if you're not sure if you're capable of doing something, go online, look at the instructions. We walk you step by step through. And then you can make a decision before you dive in if it's going to be within your sort of capabilities and interest in diving in and learning something new.
When it comes to tech, what's the most sought after how-to?
iPhone batteries are very, very popular. We have tens of thousands of people every month changing the batteries in their iPhone because these batteries only last, say, 18 months. It's about 300 charge cycles. So if you figure you run your phone down completely, plug it into the wall, charge it back up, that's a cycle 300 times, and then you need a new battery.
How do you know when you need a new battery?
Your phone, the battery doesn't last as long as it used to. Maybe okay. It's not getting all the way through a day. Sometimes the phone will be slower. Putting a new battery in can speed it up. Apple does some throttling. It's the same with Android.
Yeah.
Everybody's using the same kind of batteries. They all wear out. It's just like the tires in your car. You need to replace them every once in a while.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about how to repair things. And in the day of COVID-19, a lot of people, it's not just like you can jump, go over to your Genius counter and get things fixed, the drop of a hat. And a lot of people are trying to figure out how to do it themselves. iFixit.com provides more than 63,000 free repair guides and step-by-step instructions with photos and, as we just mentioned, degree of difficulty, how much time it'll take. I'm talking to Kyle Weins. He's founder and CEO of iFixit. If you have a question or comment for Kyle, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So you now have 63,000 free repair guides and step-by-step instructions. You didn't do all of those. How many people do you have working for you? How do you do in this?
We're a relatively small team at iFixit, but our community is massive and global. So most of the instructions on iFixit are written by the community. They're written by people that know something. You probably know how to fix a few things that I don't know how to fix. I probably know how to fix a few things that you've never taken apart. But together, if we pool our knowledge, we're better than any of us alone.
Do you vet them?
Yeah, we have a review process, but people are pretty good at communicating this. We maintain quality. We review edits as they come in. It's just like Wikipedia. But we find that systematically these guides get better over time because you're following a procedure and you say, oh, they left out this step. Let me just add it in real quick. And they get better. And we've got instructions for everything from how to fix your KitchenAid to how to put new bearings in a skateboard, how to work on power equipment. Like a screwdriver, like a drill.
Uh-huh.
So across the board, it's really surprising how many things are just really, really easy to fix. We see like a common thing that gets thrown away is a lamp. It's really easy to fix a lamp. You have a switch that's out, just swap out the switch and you're good to go.
It's fascinating though, how we're such, you know, it's an oft used term. We're a throwaway society. We just throw things away when they break. And some things are made not to be fixed, like hair dryers. Now, I'm old enough to remember when you'd actually bring your hair dryer to the fix it guy because they were repairable.
Right. They still are repairable. The challenge is that the cost of labor, the price of a new hairdryer has come down so much that it's not worth, even if it's $50 to pay a professional look at it, you're like, well, $50, I could get a new hairdryer for
right.
that. But if you do it yourself, it doesn't cost anything. We've all got a little bit of extra time right now as we're sitting at home. And I can tell you with hair dryers, you'd think, oh, well, it plugs in a high voltage. It might be really dangerous. There's a thermal fuse inside these things. And it used to be that was designed to be, resettable. They're not anymore. And so you have to just cut off the old fuse, solder a new one on, and your hair dryer will be good to go for another 10 years.
Wow. Soldering a new one on. You make that sound so simple.
Soldering is like a hot glue gun that works with metal. They're really, it sounds really intimidating. If you can get a soldering iron for $20, it's really not that hard.
You have a repairability score with 0 being least repairable, 10 being most. Tell me what the least repairable thing is out there.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. When you buy things, we don't know how easy or hard they are to fix, right? If you're going and looking for a hairdryer at the store, you've got 5 options with 5 different price points. Which one is going to be easier to fix? That information isn't out there. So we take apart new gadgets, and we rate them from 1 to 10. 10 is really easy to fix. 1 is very hard to fix. So an example of something that is hard is the iPad. The front glass of the iPad is glued to the back. And so if you want to get in and change out the battery, which is a wear component, you have to unglue it. And that is, it takes heating and precise pressure. It's challenging. Where the iPhone, you know, kind of looks the same, the iPhone is very easy to fix. So you didn't know that before because Apple doesn't put that label on the box. But iPhones are easy to fix. iPads, we recommend find a local professional who can absolutely fix it. They're very fast and good at it.
Well, iPhone doesn't put that label on the box because they don't want you fixing your stuff.
Well, and I think that's a problem and that's what leads to this throwaway society, right? If the manufacturers are not supporting, if they're not making parts available, Apple doesn't sell replacement parts for the iPhone, like batteries. So we have to, third parties like iFixit come along and we sell those batteries. But that's something that Apple should be doing, and every manufacturer should be providing for the life of their product. You know, a phone shouldn't be limited in life to 2 years when you need a new battery, right? You should be able to keep it for 5 years, but maybe that takes 2 or 3 batteries over the course of its life.
There's
only one cell phone manufacturer who sells parts to consumers, and that's Motorola.
Oh, okay. Google's AirPods received a 0 repairability score from your company. You've called them evil.
Apple's AirPods.
I'm sorry, yeah. Apple's, yeah.
Yeah, Google's are slightly better, but not much better. The AirPods are, I would say, absolutely a product that I cannot recommend. When the battery wears out, there's no way to access and replace it. But not only that, they're not safe to recycle. You can't put them in the blue bin. They're not safe in that stream. And electronics recyclers, the specialized electronics recyclers, don't want them either. Also, if you throw them in the trash, they go into the trash compactor in the trash trucks, and they catch on fire.
Wow. Yeah, okay, they are evil.
It's not a good product. It's a bad design. It shouldn't exist.
Okay. What's getting a 10 rating these days?
Dell has a lot of laptops that are at the top of our list. HP laptops. We've been given a lot of HP laptops, a 10 out of 10 lately. Both Dell and HP have repair manuals on their website, and they sell parts for them. So if you're looking at a laptop, I recommend that. On the phone side of things, the iPhone does well. The Google Pixels were doing well. They're a little bit worse. But both the Apple and the Google options are dramatically better than the Samsung phones. I don't recommend the Samsung Galaxy.
Have you seen any kind of change in behavior from the people that use iFixit.com since the pandemic kind of, got a grip on us in mid-March?
We have seen a dramatic spike in the number of people fixing things. Our traffic to many of our guides is double or triple what it was before. One that surprised us is the Nintendo Switch is one of our most popular repairs right now. The handheld game console that you walk around with. There is a manufacturing defect with the left joystick. They call it the Joy-Con. And the left one develops this really annoying thing where it drifts. So it's like you're always holding it down going left. And it's really frustrating. Nintendo extended the warranty and they said, hey, we'll cover it under warranty. But then they, during the pandemic, they shut all their repair centers down. And all of the stores are sold out of new Nintendo Switches. So the only option is to fix it. And we put together a kit that has everything that you need in the replacement part. This is a repair that is in the easy category. You can do it yourself in 10 or 15 minutes. It's really straightforward and easy. We've got instructions. So if you have a Nintendo Switch and this has been driving you crazy, you don't have to wait for the end of the pandemic to get it fixed.
Yeah, and that's like one of the repair kits you sell, right?
Right. We put together a kit which has the part, and the tools, the screwdrivers that you need to open it up. And it just makes it really easy. You get one box, it's got everything you need. You follow the instructions, and you will succeed. We've had thousands and thousands of people fix their Nintendo Switches just in the last month or so.
How much does a kit like that cost?
Oh, it's a lot less than a new one. I'll look it up. Let's see. I'm looking up. Yep. So if you go to ifixit.com, you can look on the website.
I'm just kind of curious, just generally, how much these kits cost.
Yeah. The kit is $20.
$20. Okay. iFixit started a fix it hashtag fix it at home campaign.
Fix at home. Yeah.
Fix at home campaign on Twitter and Instagram in April, encouraging people to share their photos and stories and that kind of a thing. What did you learn?
We have seen people fix so many things. I remember one of our community members, he said when the quarantine started, he said, I'm going to fix one thing a day for the next 10 days. And he did it. He fixed different things around his house. He fixed a leaky toilet. He fixed a doorknob. He fixed a laptop for a friend. And then he got to 10 days. He's like, hey, this is fun. And he kept going. And he is still doing it. We're close to, 100 days into the pandemic.
He's addicted now. Different things.
Yeah, and that's what we find. The average number of repairs that people do using iFixit is 7. So once you fix your first thing, you're hooked and you get into it. It's a lot of fun. It's really satisfying to take something that didn't work, understand it enough that you can figure out, oh, this is why it's not working. Go in, swap a little part, and have it work again. It's the best feeling in the world.
You say that repair is essential to a circular economy. What do you mean by that?
Well, if we think about what we want in the future, what's the kind of world that we want to leave for our kids? It's a world where we are not digging and mining things out of the ground to make all of the stuff that we have. We have to find a way to live within the resource constraints of the earth. And a circular economy is all about reusing and repurposing, getting as much economic value as we can out of the things that we own. So I'll give you an example. When the iPhone is manufactured in China, Apple pays Foxconn about $5 for the labor to assemble that phone. So if we brought iPhone manufacturing back to the U.S., we'd get $5 in economic value to our community for every phone that was manufactured. I mean, that's something, but it's not very much. Where if you take your iPad into a local repair shop, you pay them $50 or $100 to fix it. That's 10 times the economic value generated from a repair than we would see from manufacturing. So a circular economy is a vision of the future where we're creating more local jobs by extending the lifespans of all of the products that we have.
What materials could tech companies use to improve repairability and lifespan?
There's some really easy, straightforward things that we suggest. We see a lot of products like the iPad that are glued together. We would prefer to see screws used. All right, you flip it over on the back, you've got some screws, you unscrew that, and then the thing comes apart.
Uh-huh.
So there are some really easy, straightforward strategies. Use screws, not glues, we like to say. You can design the parts to be modular. So let's say that you have the headphone jack on a laptop. You trip over it, you break the headphone jack. Well, if it's on a separate part, so you just have to replace that headphone jack, that makes the repair a lot more affordable than if, say, you have to replace the main processor at the same time.
And you have a new medical equipment repair guide. That seems sort of – I mean, what kind of medical equipment are you talking about, and what prompted this?
We got asked by the technicians at hospitals. You might not know this, but every hospital has a team of repair professionals on site. They're called biomedical engineers or biomedical technicians, and they maintain and repair all the equipment at the hospital. And this is everything from vital sign monitors to imaging equipment, microscopes they use in the labs. They manage and maintain all of it. And they have had trouble historically getting access to the information they need, the service manuals and schematics to repair that equipment. So when the pandemic and the lockdown started, we decided to start working on putting together a database for them with repair procedures for all the equipment that is used in hospitals.
And any sense about how it's being used?
Yes, I heard from a technician yesterday. He said, yeah, I had two different things that I was looking for the manual. And I was able to get both of them off of iFixit. So having the information in a central place, you know, a typical hospital will have tens of thousands of different medical devices from hundreds of different manufacturers. Mm-hmm. There's no one central place to look. And so the technicians have to go and ask one company for a manual, and then they got to call and beg another company for a manual. And that's time away from doing their job, which is fixing equipment and closing service tickets.
Well, Kyle Weens, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks for what you do. Kyle Weens is founder and CEO of iFixit.com. We'll have a link to that, if you can't remember it, on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. More Tech Tuesdays coming up, so stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. For several Central Ohio tech startups, the pandemic has been good for business. Columbus Business First, Kiri Ghosh, has been covering this good news. Welcome back, Kiri.
Hey, thanks so much.
There were so many that are doing well that we didn't have time to get through all of them the last time we talked. And since then, there are even more. So we're not going to get through all of them today either. I can just predict that for you, okay?
That is a bold prediction.
Okay. Bill Baumel is managing director of Ohio Innovation Fund. That's a Columbus VC.
Venture capital firm.
Right. Yeah. And he said the best time to build a company is the ugliest time. How is that proving true during the pandemic?
Well, if you look back to the last recession, companies that started between 2007 and 2009 include Uber, Lyft, Pinterest, Airbnb, Slack, all of them had IPOs last year. And of course, some of them are negatively impacted by this time.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, anytime there's some kind of drastic disruption, then it's a drastic opportunity to solve that problem. So we see, you know, as we talked last time, telemedicine startups and we are seeing in this time, the folks who built stuff for virtual work are seeing huge demand, and folks who built stuff for, say, athletic trainers that are not doing much with student athletes right now because people can realize their technology is also adaptable to another use, and, you know, they can branch out.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Columbus Business First reporter Kiri Ghosh about what's working in this economy right now when it comes to tech startups. Drive Capital, the Midwest's largest venture capital company, said most of the companies in their portfolio are hiring. Which ones are?
So we've talked before about Finite State. They're hiring. They expect to grow by, I had said that they were chugging along in our last discussion, but they're actually expect to grow by tenfold.
So okay.
I was in that moment mixing them up with someone else. They're chugging at full speed. He, like Bill Baumel, said that, you know, he said he expects world-class companies to be formed in this time, and it's time for Ohio to grab that opportunity. So, for instance, I quote him saying this will have dramatic impact on manufacturing. You've heard Governor DeWine say we need to bring more manufacturing onshore. And so Drive has several startups in its portfolio that do robotics for manufacturing, some of them based here in Columbus.
One of them's Path Robotics, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Path Robotics, Ready Robotics. They have some other robotics companies that are based elsewhere. But Ready Robotics, for instance, they make kind of a adaptable type of robot for a smaller manufacturer. You don't have to be Honda size to have robots.
You can get something customized, in other words.
Right.
Another company, Olive, just raised $51 million for its artificial intelligence robot used in hospitals. What's driving that demand?
So they have an interesting situation where what Olive is a digital assistant. So what it does is take the tedium of a lot of healthcare administration. So, checking your prior authorization, help with scheduling, check all last night's billing postings, gather them up. So before, they had the fear that if they go into a hospital system and implement this this digital assistant that can do 5-for-1 return on what you spend on it, that it would be replacing employees, that people would be put out of work. Mm-hmm. So they were making the argument then, no, we are increasing the value of your employees because now they can focus on the problem case with a prior authorization and focus on what's really important and be more efficient in their jobs. And now hospitals have been furloughing employees, and they still need to have the same amount of work now that elective surgeries are coming back online. So they need this kind of to replace their workforce that they've laid off. And then when they start calling people back as volumes increase, to then have this new efficiency tool working alongside that human workforce. So it's really accelerated the pace at which Olive is being implemented in health systems, but having to do it virtually because the CEO cannot fly around and go to conferences with 10,000 people in them to talk about the future of artificial intelligence in healthcare. So he's recording videos now and doing it that way.
Drive Capital also funds two Columbus-based insurance companies, Beam Dental and Root Insurance. Both benefited when workers had to work from home. How so?
Because legacy insurers that they are competing against were still very physically based with their IT. They had big server farms. So their workforce shifts to work from home, and their own security locks them out of reaching their data until they could set up VPNs. But these folks were already built virtual. They were already in the cloud and had their security layered over their cloud infrastructure. So for them, moving their workforce home was the same as having them in the office, other than they couldn't look across the desk at each other. They had to do it over Zoom. But they didn't have to all of a sudden scramble to get access and communication set up again. They were already there. And people are wanting to do business virtually now. They don't want to go to an agent's office and sign a paper form or, touch something someone else has touched. They can do it by an app. So both of these companies are already presenting their coverage in a format that the public has adapted to.
This is a little off topic, but I'm wondering if you have any insights into this. I've been thinking about it that a lot of companies are finding benefits, or at least not the negatives they might have anticipated with people working from home. And the work's getting done, and people don't need to commute, and they can do it with their PJ bottoms on or whatever the benefits might be. But I'm wondering, as far as organizationally, are you in a better place organizationally if you want to move up the food chain and you're working at home. How do they, so I'm just wondering if you have any insights into that, of how companies, organizations think about promoting people when they don't actually work with them directly.
Wow, that's a great question. I can tell you that I've had probably about a dozen of the same conversation now, of a CEO or, you know, Mark Lamy saying, before I look down and work from home, you know, it was something you would do when there was a childcare emergency.
Mm-hmm.
We'd say, okay, you know, you can have, you can do this for temporary. And they were really approached this with trepidation. And then finding that their communication has improved. So he's, Mark Lamy said that he's talked to his co-founder, Chris Olson, more over Zoom than they had when they were in the office. Olive, the Sean Lane, the CEO, said that they have, he really looked down on work from home and now has permanently changed the organization to a distributed workforce. And he said he's banning the term remote or work from home, which have a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. And he's calling it, you're on the grid when you're working and you're off the grid when you're not. And we will be egalitarian in how we approach where people are working. They could work in an office. They could work at home. He said they could work from a cabin in the woods. They should be treated the same. And what this has done is unlocked a nationwide talent pool. So he's, you know, if Uber is laying people off, here in Columbus, the CEO is going through the list of laid off engineers in San Francisco and has his pick because he's growing, and saying, you know, we already have a sub office in San Francisco, so you could work there or you could work from home in San Francisco and work for this Columbus company. I know that Drive has been doing early meetings with potential new companies to invest in virtually, and even tried to get to a term sheet, but lost out on that one opportunity. But they're trying to invest. So I haven't asked specifically, are you promoting?
Yeah.
But I know that they are all instituting online ways to recognize employees, to, you know, have your virtual happy hours, to feel closer to their employees, because the CEO is giving weekly all staff status updates. So transparency is definitely increased. Here's how our business is doing. Everyone is letting their employees know. So that's a good question, and I should ask that. Are you promoting? So,
well,
again,
I'm just wondering, I mean, it's still more reporting. Well, it's still early in the process, and I figure if any business sector has a bead on that issue, it would be the tech sector, because even still, a lot of people have been working remotely, you know, anyways, to a greater extent. At least that's what I imagine. But yeah, good. Let me know when you get that story written. And there is a tech startup. It's called Healthy Roster. It did have to adapt its technology to meet the times. How did they do that?
So Healthy Roster, they're based in Dublin, and they have been going gangbusters because what they did is, so when you have a high school athlete who gets injured on the field, mm-hmm. This was a way for the parent to check in with the trainer and say, you know, the swelling in the knee is this much. Do I need to go to the urgent care, or how should we handle it? And it would remove that kind of step of uncertainty and could remove unnecessary ER trips or make sure that an athlete did get treated for an injury if in a timely manner. There's no high school sports right now. And they also worked with colleges. There's no college sports right now. But they had built this robust, secure video visit, chat, all those kinds of things. So they had been exploring shifting into the employer marketplace, and now there's huge demand. When employers are trying to reopen, they have to do daily temperature checks. They have to do, you know, checklists of symptoms. And so this tool was already built, so they can just pivot to this new audience. And they said they've already signed 4 employers, and they're in meetings with a lot of others who can use this tool to, you know, do those necessary checks upon reopen.
It wasn't what they intended, but it's unintended consequence.
It can be an entire new market for them once sports come back.
Right.
And, you know, then they've grown by that much.
Rev One is another venture capital company. It's providing training to tech startups to help them through. How is that going?
They're having a virtual contest right now. You know, come up with a great new idea to respond to this crisis. I'll be looking in to see what they end up discovering out of that. They told me, this was all a written interview, they've made two new investments since March, and they've approved three more to go through their, what they call a technology concept validation process. But they've also helped 24 companies apply for SBA loans. Because, you know, there are some tech companies that their product is for, you know, something that an industry that is definitely hurt by the pandemic, and thus vendors to those companies are hurt.
So, yeah, what are some of the tech startups that are hurting because of the pandemic?
You know, they're not going to want to tell me mostly.
Well, maybe tell me us the types of tech startups.
Well, this is not in Columbus, but it's in Drive's portfolio. There are two Minneapolis companies that deal with hourly workforces. One was a scheduling app. Another was a kind of a way to cash out your paycheck early. Both of those. One of them was actually laying people off during the pandemic because, you know, if you're an app that targets your restaurant workers or your, you know, your hourly type employees that are laid off, your usage is going way down.
Right. And they weren't able to pivot to other sectors?
I imagine they're trying.
That's where the fail comes in. Okay.
Well, and then anything that has a physical component. So in the Ohio Innovation Fund portfolio, there's a company in Athens, Ohio, that makes these deep freezers, like super, super cold freezers for biotech. Mm-hmm. So things for pharmaceutical companies, for research labs where you've got to keep things at, you know, kind of Kelvin temperatures, not just your, you know, it's not for your ice cream sandwich. so obviously biomedical research is very important in this time, but a lot of their parts came from China. So they had quite a disruption through January, February, but now things are coming back online in China and their supply chain is bouncing back. But of course they're a factory, so they have to set up, as all factories do, set up the distance and cleaning protocols that all facilities need right now.
Their supply chain is bouncing back, but hasn't this taught them a lesson about the supply chain in the first place and where it should be coming from and how that's working? And it could all go to hell in a handbasket by next fall again.
That is a universal lesson that uncovers a lot of structural, well, not uncovers, everyone knew there were structural inequities built into, you know, how much it costs to get U.S. steel or U.S. labor versus outsourcing. And, you know, you layer on the shipping costs, you layer on the carbon costs. So how we count those things definitely has to change, and now we're adding to that formula the lost opportunity cost of a huge disruption that cuts off your supply when you have let an entire sector diminish, you can't just flip the lights back on in your closed factories overnight.
Well, Kiri Ghosh from Columbus Business First, thanks for joining us again. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much. Take care.
You bet. You too. Kiri Ghosh is a reporter at Columbus Business First. We've been talking about which Central Ohio tech startups are or how they are navigating the pandemic. Some are doing really well because of it. More Tech Tuesday coming up with Russell Holly from Android Central. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Fortnite is known for its gaming. Now it's a popular entertainment hub. Rapper Travis Scott in April debuted the first of what will be five free concerts inside Fortnite. And movie director Christopher Nolan of Batman Begins and Memento fame has partnered with Epic Games to unveil a trailer for his new movie in Fortnite. Contributing editor at Android Central, Russell Holly, talks to us about that and more tech news. Welcome back, Russell.
Hi.
So Fortnite is a game, or it's a game platform, or it's both? I mean, how does this work?
So it's a game. You walk around with 99 other people, and you shoot each other. So the game's not super complicated, but it is mindlessly addicting.
Okay.
It's one of those things that is I wouldn't exactly say it's a positive thing on our culture, but it has certainly gotten a ton of attention from a lot of people, and it's very, very popular. And so we keep seeing these things where people try to inject live events into what's essentially the lobby of this game, where you go and instead of, you know, jumping into the map where you go to actually play the game, there's something happening in the lobby. And the lobby has been used by the game creator itself to tease big updates and to showcase something happening. You know, if something catastrophic is happening to the world that the game is being played in, you see it when you first log in, and it lets you know that you have to go and pay attention to something. Through this, we've also seen, the evolution of this in that there's been live concerts now from multiple performers, where you can just kind of go and exist in this lobby of this video game and see this thing. And for some people, this is now a concert or a live event that you're now seeing on the largest screen in your home. But for a lot of other people, this is happening on your phone. There's still a ton of people who play Fortnite, mobile, either on Nintendo Switch or on their phone. And so this is still something that you're watching, as your remote. And all of these things that we've seen so far have been kind of deeply integrated into the Fortnite world. So with the last concert that you brought up at the beginning there, you saw this massive version of the artist, dancing around and doing things. You could kind of run all the way around the world and see this. But what has been announced here by Christopher Nolan is a movie, specifically the trailer to a movie. But it's not, all that we know is that it's going to, the movie itself is going to air in full in the game eventually. But it's not really clear how that's going to happen or why this has been chosen, aside from because there are just a ton of people, who play Fortnite.
What do you think about this? What do you think is happening?
I think there, this is an attempt to get, a lot of people who are stuck in quarantine a reason to watch a thing that they're not going to be able to go to a theater to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that watching a movie screen from a distance, staring at your television screen, is just kind of weird and doesn't make because it doesn't fill your screen, right? Like, you still have all the stuff going around in the game.
Yeah.
When you watch a movie, the movie fills your screen. Dancing around in Fortnite while you watch this movie means that there's other things happening on the screen that are not the movie. And I personally would find that very distracting and not be super interested in watching in that format. But it's clear that there's going to be a lot of other folks who are going to be taking a part in this.
Do we know what the movie's about?
No, they haven't given us the full trailer yet. We know that the film itself is done by Christopher Nolan, and that it's kind of an action film. And there's not a ton of details out yet for the movie called Tenet.
Okay.
But there is kind of a teaser trailer that's out right now. That's not kind of the full movie trailer. So you can go and look up TENET is the name of the movie and get, kind of a basic idea there. It's definitely an action thriller movie, which appeals to the genre of people who are going to be watching through this game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really bizarre, decision to stare at your screen in order to watch a different screen.
But you don't have to watch the movie. You can just jump into the map of the game if you want.
Right. If you wanted to go into Fortnite and just play the game, then that is definitely an option. But yeah, there's, as we saw from the concert, there's, plenty of people who are going to kind of jump and dance around while this movie is happening.
It says the film will be free for fans, and I'm wondering why give it away unless they're trying to tap into a market that maybe has been flagging for them.
It's certainly possible that this is, an attempt to reach, kind of a new set of consumers, especially, like I said, right now, while people are kind of stuck at home. It's also possible that Epic, the company behind Fortnite, is kind of test ballooning this as a way to sell movies through its video game platform.
Okay.
Because Epic Games has what's called the Epic Game Store, where you can go and you can buy computer games, and it's also where you can kind of download Fortnite for your phone. So it's possible that this is kind of a test balloon for Epic to see if it's possible to have a large enough audience in order to sell movies or rent movies through its online store.
It's going to be showcased in Fortnite's Party Royale mode, and I know we've talked about that before, but what difference does it make what mode it's in?
Well, the mode that it's in is how many people are able to kind of join you and do things.
Oh, okay.
So Fortnite is, when you start the game up, it is designed to be kind of a one versus 99 other people, whereas the party mode gives you, friends that you can join with and communicate with and things like that. So you are able to kind of chat with those people while you're watching the movie.
I feel like we were just talking about something else like that.
Amazon has a feature that they're rolling out next month that is going to allow something similar through Twitch.
Okay. All right. Another gaming thing. Okay. All right. It's interesting what the pandemic has spawned.
It's true.
So, Razer Opus headphones. Another. You're giving it 4.5 stars out of 5. That's not bad. What's going on?
These are really good headphones. So usually, when you're dealing with over-the-ear headphones that are kind of high-end headphones, they usually start at around $300. Sony makes a really nice set of $350 headphones. And honestly, they're just kind of hard to recommend to someone who looks at you and says, I have never bought a nice set of headphones before. I usually think headphones cost 20 or 40 bucks. What do you recommend? If you look at someone and say, buy these $350 headphones, they will usually laugh at you. It is difficult. A lot of my colleagues, they look at these kind of high-end headphones and they really enjoy them. But they're just hard to recommend to folks unless you are like really, really excited about high-end audio. Razer released a set of headphones. They're a gaming company. They've been doing gaming stuff for a long time and that includes gaming headsets. This headset called the Opus is actually designed more for someone who wants to, kind of casually listen to music while they walk around the house and not play games. And what was really great about them is that they have all of the same features as these $350 headphones that I have normally tested in the past, but they're only $200.
Okay, well, only $200. What world are you in?
Well, it's $150 difference. That's pretty
it is. I get what you're saying.
It's a very expensive headphone. They're definitely still, but these are designed to be active noise canceling headphones, which means that when you put them on and enable that feature, sounds from the world around you kind of go away. It uses microphones. There are 4 microphones on the headphones to kind of pull, listen to the world around you and kind of make those sounds disappear as they go into your ears. But they also have what's called an audio pass-through mode, which means that if I decide to walk down the street with these headphones on, having all of the sound around me go away is not safe because there are cars and cars don't really care that you can't hear them. being able to push this button actually goes the opposite way in that it takes the microphones and amplifies the sound from around you so that you can hear the cars around you more clearly when they're coming at you from a distance. So it has, you know, you can have these headphones on as you're, you know, kind of wandering around, not just inside your house, but outside when we're allowed to do that again, and be able to, you know, feel like you're safe as you're doing so.
I can't help it but think that you're going to like that the design and the color are different from other Razer products.
Razer's keyboards and mice and things, if you go to their website and you look, they all have one thing in common. They are usually very dark black or a glossy black with bright green accents on them. These are kind of the gamer colors, the Mountain Dew generation, as has been lovingly referred to by some of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And usually with LEDs that, you know, are bright in every color of the rainbow. They're cool. They're not the kind of thing that I'm going to wear when I leave my.
They are.
You know, they're just not my colors.
Gotcha.
That's right. The Razer Opus headphones are a dark blue, an almost black blue with silver accents on them, and they don't look like gamer headphones. They look, you know, just kind of like a nice set of high-end headphones that you'd see on the shelf with Sony and Bose and those other companies, because that's the audience that Razer wants here. It's kind of the older group who isn't really excited about broadcasting that they're a gamer to the entire world.
Okay. A little fancier.
Right.
Brilliant is a crazy fancy light switch for your smartphone. I don't get it. What is it?
This is, yeah. So, you know, we have all of this stuff going on in our smart homes. As people go and build smart homes, they buy things from a bunch of different companies where they have light bulbs from one company and maybe a light switch or a thermostat from another company. And they don't always talk to each other super well. So this company called Brilliant made what they call a home control panel. It's not really a light switch, but that's, you know, how it gets, you know, kind of presented. It's a screen that is on your wall that is similar to a hotel that you would see in Las Vegas or something like that, that has kind of the entire room that you can go and control using this touch panel. So for someone who doesn't want to pull out their phone every couple of seconds to do things or speak to Amazon Echo or Google Home, this is a switch that you can have on the wall that gives you control of everything from the thermostat to the blinds, if you have electronic blinds, if you want music to play through your home. There's just a ton of different smart home things that you can go through and connect it to. It's very clever. It's also really expensive.
Mm-hmm. $300.
These are $300. They're designed with onboard cameras so that when you come in front of it, it actually uses face detection to see who you are and give the controls that are relevant to you in the panel. So if you have a teenager in the house and they're more interested in kind of music controls and light in their room and you don't want them to have access to maybe the thermostat, you don't want them to turn the thermostat up or down, you can actually have that set. So that when they walk in front of this thing, it actually gives them those tools, but doesn't give them access to everything.
You can have a single switch or a four switch configuration. What's the significance of that?
The four switch configuration is for people who just have gigantic homes and need to have access to, you know, these kind of controls in more places than just kind of the main thoroughfare. The single.
Okay.
For someone who has, where the room that you spend most time in is probably your living room. So having the switch in your living room or having it in your bedroom so that you don't have to, you know, walk all the way downstairs to adjust the thermostat. That's kind of what that's for.
And there are color options with this, too. Is this something worth noting?
It is, you know, because a lot of times the home controls come in that kind of flat white, which is what you see a lot of, you know, kind of standard outlets and,
right.
and things like that in. But if you have added some custom color options to your home, or you've decided that white is just not, you know, kind of the default for your home, then there are some, you know, home friendly color options available. Nothing, you know, no bright blues or greens or pinks or anything like that, but, you know, kind of the standard, you know, wall decoration colors.
Well, Russell Holly, thanks as always for joining us to talk about all this stuff. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Russell Holly, contributing editor at Android Central. That's it for Tech Tuesday today. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.